If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Pixel Sift. I'm your host Blanka from Street Fighter, and I'm joined in the studio by not only my co-hosts Mitch and Scott.
Hey Blanka.
Happy to be here. I'll fight you later.
Yep.
But we're also joined by local video game developer Michael DiPiazzi. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
No worries. Good to be here.
Michael's going to be talking to us all about his game Final Days a little bit later in the show, but we'll also be talking about some of the recent headlines, won't we, Scott?
Yes, we'll be talking about Predator DLC, how some devs aim to get consumers stuck in the DLC trap.
And on our final topic, we'll be looking at the recent controversy surrounding Oculus Rift founder Palmer Luckey.
That's right, he's been copping a little bit of... A little bit of flack, but before we...
What's it like to have two last names?
Who knows? We'll have to ask him. We'll get him on the line. Give him a call. Yeah. Before that, though, we might jump into the shipping news with Brian Fairbanks.
My name is Brian Fairbanks, and this is the shipping news. Kalgoorlie-based studio Outback Pixels just released a substantial update to their game Thwart Geo, adding multiplayer features, additional game modes, and difficulty scaling as suggested by fans of the game. Lastly, they removed ads, made the game complete and free with one in-app purchase called Thwart Supporter. We spoke with Jez and Kim back in episode 31. Check it out for some more background information about the game. Good news for Australian game culture, two new co-working spaces designed for game development have opened in two different Australian states. Game Plus has launched on the 14th of September in Watson, Canberra, to cater to and unite the growing game development community. Game Plus has been built to enhance collaboration and innovation among specialist technology startups and game developers in the area, as well as to enhance communications and the relationship between government and the local game industry. Enterprise Hobart was launched on the 22nd of September as a startup accelerator program supported largely by the Tasmanian state government to further the development of the local growing game community. It consists of two co-working spaces based in Hobart and Launceston. Jason Imms, founder of TasGDS and former guest on the show, will be community manager of Enterprise Hobart. One of the studio's giant margarita is releasing Party Golf on the PS4 on October 4th, which is the first Tasmanian title released on a major console system. Melbourne-based studio Hipster Whale, makers of the extremely popular Crossy Road, probably aren't shocked with clones of their game. However, this week, a blatant ripoff, Crossy Road 2, appeared on the Apple App Store with stolen screenshots and an incomplete, Flappy Bird-like game that is chock full of ads. While this is common in any market system, criticism has been leveled at Apple about approval of games like this. Without approval, games cannot appear on the store at all. David Price of popular Apple blog and news site Macworld laments that Apple's quality control system is lacking, especially with the Apple Store adding over 1,000 new apps each month, articulating that a report clone button on each app would help. He says it's up to the users to enact change and hold the companies in control of these stores to a much higher level, and of course, to support the makers of the original games financially and through social media. Ripoffs and clones only survive because people are downloading them and being fooled, he says. The game is rated 4+, yet some of the ads are inappropriate for younger gamers, and one of the risks is that people may mistake this clone for a real product. Interestingly, this Crossy Road clone has over 300 reviews with an average of 4.5 stars, which makes it difficult for people to tell the difference between a real and a fake at casual glance. While it's inevitable that this game and other clones will disappear, questions need to be asked about how this can happen again and again.
Pixel Sift. Pixel Sift. No, seriously, Pixel Sift. No, seriously.
Pixel Sift.
So DLC for video games is nothing new. From horse armor to full-blown campaigns, there's nothing that devs really can't add on top of their games that shipped. But what happens when companies begin to take advantage of gamers' demand for new content, charging large amounts for and locking much of the game's features behind a paywall?
That is a good question. I think inherently that adding stuff into a game is not a bad thing.
No, I don't think so either.
You know, games would stop as soon as they had been shipped, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, of course, that, you know, the internet allows you to add more things into games. Previously, if it was like a PlayStation 1 game, you couldn't do it. You just have to sell a sequel if you wanted to.
And you can also fix problems.
And you can fix problems. So I think this is a, you know, it's a good thing. And it also allows for different types of games to exist. For example, maybe, you know, Michael's game. Would it be as easy for you to get up on to the store and sell it if, you know, if you didn't have internet distribution?
Oh, hell no.
No.
Definitely not.
Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, there is a value in this. But one of the, what we're kind of looking at today is when there's a sort of an ongoing repetitive sort of purchase cycle that kind of exists, where the gameplay itself sort of incentivizes or strongly encourages purchasing more DLC on an ongoing basis.
So we're not referring to, like, say, like a subscription model, like, for example, WoW. What are we referring to when we talk about predatory DLC?
So these are games that are mostly going to be considered freemium, or sometimes they're called free-to-play. These are games that, you know, are sold as something that you don't have to initially pay anything to start for, but there are games that are quite quickly gated off into different areas where there is...
It's basically
a paywall.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of game where you can survive by just having the basic, you know, $60 version or whatever, but you're going to be extremely limited in how much you can, like, play with other players, you know, just experience game to its fullest.
I think, well, mainly the big one that you were going to bring up, Johnny, was League of Legends, wasn't it? Like, the...
League of Legends is a really interesting.
Pleased with that.
Yeah, so League of Legends is a really interesting example in that it is it's one of the biggest free to play games in the world, one of the most popular, has a huge following online. All you need to do is jump on Twitch and have a look, and it's always at the top. There's people playing it all the time, professionals, tournaments, everything like that. They have a really interesting system in which they get people to kind of contribute to the cost of making the game. It's going to be an expensive game to make, so they have all these different levels of earning things. So it'd be very similar to games you might have played. So Overwatch, for example, mm-hmm. Has a similar system, this one, which you can earn in-game currency and then use that to purchase things. But they've got a system here which has it's kind of like more of a gambling element to it than many other games. They have this system that they created earlier on called, it's called Hex Crafting, and Hex Tech Crafting, sorry. And basically you get drops, very similar to Overwatch. You get a chest, or similar to Team Fortress 2, where you get a key, and you have to put those chests and keys together and you unlock things as part of that. Now, you can earn a certain amount of those chests per month, or you can buy more.
Right.
So there's a limit of 4, so it's basically 1 a week.
But this is just like cosmetic stuff you get out of
this, cosmetic
right?
stuff. This is skins, and sometimes you can get characters and things like that, but I think it's mostly skins.
Right.
But as part of that, you can earn a segment of a chest, or okay. a segment of a key. So instead of having a key which would drop at a random thing, say, for example, in Team Fortress 2, you can earn a portion of that. So you can then build those up depending on the way that you play the game, which can then be converted into a key, which can then be converted with a chest into an item in-game. And there's other options as well where these sometimes the items that you get out of these chests are not even a full skin as well. They have these things called shards, which you can use to basically combine 3 different shards together to make a skin.
So is this like maybe bringing in an MMO kind of aspect.
Yeah, the thing about it, that the main criticism of this particular aspect or this particular scheme is that it is very difficult for anyone to actually play the game without spending any money. Okay. If you want to get everything in it, they incentivize doing all these sorts of things, but it will take you literally forever, like something to, in the realm of 10,000, 20,000 hours to ever earn anything correctly, basically. So
I guess like it's one of those two currency games, isn't it? Like
it is. There's money that you pay, and then there's money that you convert into poker chips, effectively, like a in-game sort of currency as well. So
I think that kind of behavior is really kind of the problem I have with it is it's preying on specific types of gamers. Like, you know, a specific part of the market is always going to be paying for this DLC, you know,
at a large proportion of it.
Yeah, so you're going to be the people, the latecomers to the games, and just like your OCD kind of players that really just need to complete everything, you know, they're going to be the ones that are paying for this. So like I said, it's a really small and an important part of their market that are going to be unfairly paying for this kind of push.
It's really interesting if you look at some. I'm just got the Apple App Store open at the moment, and there's this sort of you have to go and convert your money into chips, very much like you would.
It's gambling.
In a casino.
Yeah.
And the top like 20 games, there's quite a few actual casino games in there, but they aren't. There's no way to get your money out.
Well,
so all you do is you're putting your money into it.
The problem I have with this and why it's so exploitative is because it is like gambling. You're going to put, especially for the ones where, and this isn't with all of them, but the ones where you're going to buy a pack or something and you're not guaranteed anything. You're guaranteed you get this pack, but you don't know what's in that. You might get nothing. You might get some skins and some faff that you don't really want to spend that kind of money on.
All right, so how do you, like, it? So I bought a couple of loot boxes in Overwatch, for example. Is this on the same level as that, do you think?
Well, I don't know. What did you get in your loot boxes?
Because in your loot box, you get one individual item, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe they're not items that you want. They're lesser level items as well. But that's an item that's full. It's not an item that will only be a portion of an item that you'll need to combine with other bits and pieces.
Four things pop up in a loot box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, right. And like usually it's crap, you know?
But, you know, that's the thing. I think there's a difficulty, especially with these sort of games of splitting up the way that you reward people. This reward, like risk-reward cycle, is an important part of game design.
Yep.
And this is another sub-game that you play in sort of the game of that. But, you know, if you incentivize that too much, then...
So compare it now to, let's say, buying Magic the Gathering cards, for example.
Similar. It's card games are a perfect example of another similar system where, there's this random element to it. You are kind of putting it in there. Some of that's the thrill of the chase, but...
But that's where your money from the game's going. You haven't already spent, like, $100 for the actual game.
Yep.
The cards are the game.
Yeah.
Right.
And you have a card in your hand at the end, and you could sell those cards in the end as well. These are all digital items that you can't sell on.
This kind of DLC tactics are not going anywhere. Last year, EA had, like, a roughly $2.2 billion revenue. I think over $900 million of that came from DLC and extra content.
Wow.
Big money.
So it's not changing. If anything, this is going to only become bigger and more prominent.
And I think as people start getting older and more mature and are able to think about these things, we might see some different policies. But
possibly.
Who knows? Because there's always the next generation of customers coming through. Let's jump into our next topic.
You're listening to Pixel Sift. Or you might be watching Pixel Sift on Twitch. Pixel Sift.
Now, we're still joined in the studio by Michael DiPiazzi. He is developing a game called Final Days. Michael comes from Plus7 Software, based here in Western Australia. Now, it reminds me of the old school GTA with the top-down world exploration. But this, instead of stealing cars and robbing banks, and could you rob banks in the second one?
I remember robbing a bank.
In the second one, maybe. I haven't played that for years, but the first one, definitely not.
Yeah. You're fighting your way through your final days.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about what your game is and how it kind of came about?
Well, I guess Final Days is an intense multiplayer shooter online. The basic premise is, I guess, Dirty Warfare has mutated most of humanity and turned them all into bloodthirsty, crazy mutants. And now you've got to band together with what remains of humanity and battle for your survival.
And you're not going to sit down and have a poetry night and cross the barriers between mutant and human, and there's a there will be blood, as they say.
Yes, yes, lots of it.
So it's kind of like it's for people who might know, it's sort of a twin sticks shooter style of game.
Yep.
And you can play multiplayer with up to four players. Is it locally?
You can play with up to four players locally and 16 players over a network.
And when you're playing 16 players as a network, is it 16 players together or are you individually competing in your team of four?
16 players together.
Wow.
I am thinking of adding more game modes to have more team-based stuff and that kind of thing. But for now, it's sort of everyone's all in it together.
So you've done some pretty significant testing for this game. I think we originally talked to you when at the Global Game Jam March this year, March, April this year. So you've been working on it since then. You've taken to several play-ups and stuff. What are some of the things that you've learnt from people playing your game?
I've learnt quite a lot. The play-ups in particular have been great for feedback. Some of the best changes I've actually made have been from player feedback. Actually, at the last play-up, Oscar Britton sat there and talked to me for like about an hour and gave me all these tips to make the game feel a lot better, which was fantastic.
He knows he's top-down, that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the biggest feedback I've got is, more in regards to the single-player experience, because it's great fun multiplayer, but if you're playing by yourself, it can be a little bit boring at the moment. So these are some of the things I'm looking into doing, like adding more game modes in that, say, like a challenge mode where you have to complete a particular challenge, like kill three zombies with one bullet or something like that. Mm. So it's kind of like a bit more of a puzzle and you got something to do apart from playing, just killing zombies with other people.
Is it supposed to be ideally played though with four people right next to you? Is that the best way to play it?
Definitely. The main focus is as a multiplayer game, but as a small indie dev, I also appreciate the fact that for a multiplayer game to be successful, you need players. And if someone starts playing the game and there's no players, they're not going to stick around. So I need something else there to sort of keep people interested, maybe while they wait for someone else to come online and play a game with them.
That's something we've heard from a lot of different people, that kind of building that community there is something very important for the longevity of your game and, you know, to even kind of get it out of the blocks as well. So you said that you're going to try and make sure that you've got people there to do that. What are some of the things you're thinking about doing in terms of getting people to jump on and play with their mates?
Well, I'm launching my early access on Monday. One of my main motivations for that is to actually try and build more of a community and start engaging more people, get people who are interested on board, and then hopefully I'll start organizing regular play sessions, that kind of thing. So at least then there's sort of scheduled times where people can get online and join in on big sessions. I'm also working with another local developer, Scott Kevill, on doing Game Ranger support. I don't know if you've heard of Game Ranger.
No. Well, could you explain that for us?
Game Ranger is basically a multiplayer service, similar to, things like GameSpy, which is no longer around. But it focuses more on supporting multiplayer for older games, which, multiplayer sort of died and the official servers and stuff are all gone. But through Game Ranger, you're still able to play multiplayer with your friends online. It's got quite a few people using it. I don't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but it's quite a lot. So I'm kind of hoping that maybe that could be another avenue, like another community, where I could get more players.
I think it's interesting to think about that sort of stuff early on in the piece as well, before the game comes out. I mean, it's coming out next week, but in early access, but having the idea of where this can go into the future as well is an interesting sort of thing. I remember playing many games where the servers had been shut down and using a VPN tunnel to play local matches against people at other people's houses and things like that. So,
As Gianni said, we came across your path at the Global Game Jam in March, but you were first seen about Perth Game Fest last year with the game. So over the last 12 months, how has the game changed and developed from the idea that it was?
That's a good question. Time seems to go so quickly, so it doesn't really feel like a year for me. But I guess the main things I've been focusing on since the last PGF was my Steam Greenlight campaign, getting a good trailer done, getting my first public demo out, applying a lot of polish to the game, improving the lighting, the visual effects. I think a lot of people have commented like how much better the game looks to last year. It was something actually I got a lot of feedback on. A few people said, love the game, but the visuals might sort of put a few people off. Okay. So I've tried to sort of put a lot more polish on it. I'm hoping it looks cool now.
Well, you're going to have a big crowd of people down there at the Perth Games Fest this weekend. If you're in Western Australia, you can check it out. You can come listen to us. We're going to have a live episode as well. There's going to be plenty of great Western Australian developers. Michael, stick around. We'll keep chatting to you about this. We'll have a bit of the play of the game after the episode as well, so you can jump on our Twitch channel or watch again on YouTube. So right now, though, let's jump into our next topic.
You're listening to Pixel Sift. So by now, we should have all definitely heard of and hopefully even experienced some VR. One of the main products to bring us into this commercially futuristic form of tech was the Oculus Rift, designed and created by the company's founder, Palmer Luckey. Another thing we're all probably aware of is the upcoming Trump versus Clinton, basically American presidential elections. Well, Luckey's been making some waves the world over this past week, as it has come out that he's been involved with and had been funding Trump via some anti-Clinton Reddit-fueled meme tirades. The whole thing has become this massive and frankly quite confusing matter. So our final topic for today will be attempting to shed some light on this matter.
So what happened? What did old Palmer do?
Look, it's a little bit up in the air, to be honest. Basically, it all comes from this Daily Beast article where they had said that Luckey had basically told them that under the name of Nimble Rich Man, he'd been pushing forth these, like I said, negative Clinton memes.
There's a subreddit called The Donald,
yes,
where this sort of stuff tends to accumulate. And there was a push from him to put into supporting Trump. Now Trump is copying a lot of criticism, I guess. So is Hillary, of course. But importantly for this is this company is, Palmer Luckey is seen as the person in VR.
Now, the confusing side of this is that if we just go off the original Daily Beast article, it all seems to be very fairly factual and like matter of fact. And they've been even been told this. I haven't got the article writer's, the author's name with me at the moment, but he's posted up email conversations with Luckey claiming to be, saying all these things. But now he's come out and said that he did contribute money to this company, which is called Nimble America. But that's all he did. He never posted. He never did anything, blah, 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 blah. So his support's there, but the rest of it is hearsay, basically.
There's lots of lobbying groups that kind of exist within this sort of weird, shady underground level, and
it's all very shady. And online, the further you dig, the worse it gets.
Online campaigning and counter campaigning and research and all this sort of stuff is a huge aspect of presidential elections, and
absolutely,
I guess even elections here in Australia now as well. So
I mean, them putting their support or lack of support into Reddit is it's quite a big community and quite an important community for them as far as their lacking access goes through in their usual routes. They're not going to access the people that they want to do through their commercial kind of
If I want to bring it back to gaming for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Please do. how dare you?
It seems that a lot of...
This is politics, Sift.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
It seems that a lot of VR developers have now pulled support for Oculus as a result of this.
Yeah.
So I've got Scooter Games, who have said, until Palmer Luckey steps down from his position at Oculus, we'll be cancelling Oculus support for our games. They also said, it's not about politics. It's about the face of a company financially backing racist trolls. He is free to vote for whoever he pleases.
I don't see that. There's interesting. So people have said that the company is not Palmer Luckey,
which is true.
But
he, like they said, he's the face of it.
Yeah.
He's, when you think of Oculus Rift, you also think Palmer Luckey because he soldiered it. He did it on his own.
Yeah. Well, this guy's no stranger to drama. I mean, when he sold to Facebook, that was like that.
Yeah.
Of course. And now Xerox is still after him.
Facebook is a as a parent company as well, has actually had some of the board members who have funded things like this as well as part of this. I can't remember the name now.
This brings just blanked it on me. More confusion to it because Zuckerberg's come out and slammed Trump a bunch of times in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
Like, so the mixture of kind of presidential choices in their stable is unsettling. And yeah, I don't know. It's going to go somewhere. But it's not just Screw to Games as well. It's Tomorrow Today Labs. They posted it saying, "Hey, Oculus, Palmer Luckey's actions are unacceptable. Newton VR, which is their game, which is their thing, it will not be supporting the Oculus Touch as long as he is employed there."
Peter Thiel is the Facebook executive who has supported Donald Trump as well, parent company of Oculus. Now, our pal John Kane, developing the game Killing Time at Lightspeed, came out this week and said that he would not be supporting the Oculus for his upcoming 2D puzzle game, Mallow Drops. Got picked up by some of the press around the world, and he said it was obviously a joke. It's not a VR game.
Yeah.
But then people said, actually, if you want to port it to VR, we could make it happen. So who knows? Check this space because we might see an update for Mallow Drops on this.
Michael, would that influence you? Like, if a company was to, let's say, offer you like some, like if you were to work with a company,
well, let's say you were making a VR game at the moment,
and maybe they said
something you didn't agree with.
It doesn't
have to be this topic.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because it's business versus personal opinions.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you draw the line, though?
I mean, the guy sounds like... It sounds like some shady things have happened, and it sounds like he's been a bit irresponsible, and he's copping some backlash for it now. It's hard for me to say whether I would react the same way. At the end of the day, people are entitled to their own opinions.
What if Palmer Luckey was out there supporting an anti-top-down zombie shooter game group, slandering memes on...
He's entitled to his opinion. I can't change his mind.
That's very diplomatic of you there, trying to bait you out there.
Wait till he finds out that this podcast is sponsored by Pauline Hanson.
Yeah.
It isn't. I love everyone having their opinion, and I think that is a really fair comment to make because, yes, everyone is entitled to their opinion. You can't tell people what to do or say or blah, blah, blah. But on the flip side, shitposting offers nothing to online discussion.
Agreed.
If anything, or actually, all it does is squash and hinder it. And that's what he's not only put his name forward to, but he's put his money into it, which is basically any person that owns an Oculus Rift has, you know, can feel that their money went towards that and feel bad about that. I would.
Yeah, this sort of thing doesn't make the internet a better place. It kind of makes it a worse place where people get victimized and upset.
From a young 20s tech dude like that, who a lot of people probably look up to in similar positions, it's a bad move, man. Bad move.
Look, one of the big things that people have said about this is that Oculus isn't Palmer Luckey. There are lots of people who are working there who believe very passionately, who work very hard, may not have these particular beliefs. So being hasty and pulling your support for their platform might have a bigger effect than what you think.
Plus,
but, you know, this is the way that this system works. You know, there is a feedback system to your actions. And if people disagree with your actions, they're entitled to boycott their thing. It's one of the market mechanisms that we have. Mechanisms. The mechanisms of my mouth aren't working, which is lucky because we've actually reached the end of the episode. So we've run out of time.
Oh, so lucky.
Yeah, very lucky. Palmer, lucky that we've reached the end of this episode. Michael, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today on this episode of Pixel Sift. We're going to be very excited to play your game at Perth Games Fest, play it a bit later on Twitch as well. For everyone else who's joining us, you can jump onto our website, which is www.pixelsift.com.au. Up there, we'll have links to the show. You can download the demo still, of Final Days. And you can see where it will be on early access on Steam come next week. Scott, we have social media, do we not?
Yes, we do. If you are social media friendly, facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, twitch.tv/pixelsift, and youtube.com/pixelsiftau.
And we're asking at the moment, if you've got any questions for us, we're having a live Q&A session at Perth Games Fest. So send us your questions. It can be about anything in particular. You want to know about your star sign, your horoscope for the day. Yep. But maybe if you want to know about podcasting or games.
I'll be reading palms.
Yeah, Mitch will be reading palms. He'll have his tea leaves ready to go.
Yep.
In your tea leaves, Mitch, have you found the path to past, which will lead into our future, and by that, our older episodes.
No, not in the tea leaves, but there are links in the RSS. There are RSS links on our page, and you can also find them in the tea leaves, that is iTunes or Pocket Casts or any other good podcast player.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that works.
We will see you guys on episode 50 at Perth Games Fest. Hope to see you there.
I'm going to burn some tea leaves.
Peace out.
See you later.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today at sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.